This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a poetic evening with an acclaimed actress, a Shakespeare first at a local festival, or an artistic meet-and-greet with neighbors in the St. Claude Corridor, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. Acclaimed actress C.C.H. Pounder, known for her role as Dr. Loretta Wade on the CBS series NCIS New Orleans, will take center stage at the Contemporary Arts Center for an evening of poetry and spoken word. The award-winning actress will read from Donald Wahle's Slow Dance on the Fault Line. The special event, An Evening with C.C.H. Pounder, celebrates the CAC's upcoming performing arts season. C.C.H. Pounder joins us now by phone. Welcome to Inside the Arts.
Thank you so much.
We are so lucky to have you in New Orleans with the filming of the TV series NCIS. Thank you for keeping the city in the national spotlight with your work.
Oh, that's fabulous to hear and nicely put. I appreciate that.
Fans have followed your career from the NBC series ER to The X-Files on Fox and feature films like Avatar, just to name a few. And now you are presenting a different side of CCH in an evening of poetry and spoken word. Which works will you explore?
I thought using Donald Wahle, who was a friend of mine, a great friend who's passed away. It's about 20 years, but his words are still magnificent today. And he's got a kind of a Tennessee Williams turn of phrase. And so I thought it would be great to introduce him to the New Orleans crowd in the event that they didn't know him. And it was also a way to introduce myself outside of Loretta Wade to the New Orleans audience.
Tell us more about Donald Wahle. Who was he, and what is it about his work that attracts you? Slow Dance on the Fault Line.
Donald Wahle grew up in a time of AIDS. He was speaking about Hollywood, its excess, and I thought Donald was very, very frank, I should say, about his observances. And I never thought anything of it until when you read it again, now that he's gone, there were just so many descriptions that were like small scenes from a movie or scenes from life, and I thought it would be very appropriate for New Orleans. You know, a place of minor excess, shall we say, that celebrates the opening of a paper bag with such exuberance that has its drinks free and clear in the streets where people think that that's the place to come to either be their real selves or their alternate selves or their extraordinary selves or their selves unhinged. And I thought that this would be an interesting contrast to put together as an evening among the artists just to get their opinion of that. So here we are, off to the races with it.
Can you recite something for us?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I'm going to read you something from Chateau Marmont, which a lot of people know it's one of the most sort of famous Hollywood hotels, and many, many artists have gone there over the years. It's quite an iconic hotel up in the hills. This is Donald's Chateau Marmont. I will read two of the verses. I cannot reason your midnights and your abandoned mornings. You leave me in bedrooms with open windows, stranded in the palsy of a red, hot October wind. From Mexico and deserts I do not know. As if you jumped or sprayed the air with a delicate poison, and my lungs would turn crimson with want. This is the one hotel I know, its lobbies of smoke-stained walls, the beds of old linen, the odor of thorns, bloomed-out oleanders, and dry grass. Your teeth in my ear, and your cigarette at the side of the bed. Like a timer. That will be just the introduction to have people abuzz and talking.
The title, Slow Dance on the Fault Line, is that referring to earthquakes?
Yes, it is. Shaking up your life. Yes.
In addition to your long career in TV and film, you are also a big supporter or advocate of the arts. In which ways are you giving back to the arts community?
A lot of people don't know that I actually have an alternative reality in another life. My husband and I owned the first private museum of contemporary art in Dakar, Senegal, for 25 years. And this year it was given over to the government of Senegal, to the country. It's the first private gift donation of any kind in the country. That ceremony is happening sometime in late June, July. And so I have been collecting art, nurturing artists, searching and finding for well over 35 years, I would say. And while we had that museum in Senegal, I also had the Pounder Coney Art Space in Los Angeles for about 20 years. I have always had a passion for that. I've participated in the Dakar Biennale since 1992. I've been to the Havana Biennale, to the Venice Biennale, to art fairs around the country and abroad. So I've, in a funny way, lived a completely full art life parallel with my work in film and television. So it came as a natural sort of thing to me. After the first year in New Orleans, I started to feel the itch again to maybe have art salons. And so I've been visiting art studios and getting to know what's there. The irony, of course, is that Neil Barclay, who runs the CAC, is the brother to Paris Barclay, who is my ex-boss from Sons of Anarchy. So I had an immediate connection when I came in, and they welcomed me with open arms. I joined the guild for John T. Scott, which is part of the CAC now. And I am getting my feet wet. It's my entree into the art world in New Orleans, and I'm getting to know the artists and who's there. And my particular interest has always been artists from an African heritage. That's how the museum was created in Senegal, was that we would find artists of the diaspora and then bring them home to Africa, and so that the Africans would see what their seeds have produced and are thinking and creating in the outside world. So here I am now at the beginning again in a new city, which has the potential of me being there for a little while. And I thought, well, you know what? Let me start by visiting. So I've been visiting artists and going to galleries. I live in the art area, and I started.
What an incredible journey.
I'm passionate about art in all its forms, in music, in art, the visual art. I think it is transformative for communities and society, and it shows us things that can really open up our mind and our thought processes.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in England. When we were in England, the American accent was, y'all, come on over here. And we all spoke like John Wayne. We were terrible. I actually even remember the one time it happened where I was in America already. I graduated from Ithaca College. I was doing regional theater. And I think it took about 6 years when somebody came backstage after a show and they said, oh, you were marvelous. And I waited. And I waited, and I didn't hear, where are you from? And it was like, yay, finally, because it takes a really long time to eradicate.
To lose the accent, yeah.
It really is tough. Bob Fosse asked me to do an accent, and I did it for him. And then he asked me to do the role in All That Jazz, and that's actually how I accidentally ended up in a film.
What will people remember long after this evening of poetry?
That there was something about the power of art that evening that said, you know what? That's a part of the world that I want to live in, where you open up your heart and your mind and you learn new things and you see the world from other people's perspectives, and it therefore educates and informs and inspires me. Is that too much to ask?
That's beautiful. Just beautiful. Award-winning actress CCH Pounder, a.k.a. Dr. Loretta Wade, on the CBS hit series NCIS New Orleans. It's been a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you so much.
The Contemporary Arts Center presents An Evening with CCH Pounder, featuring a poetry and spoken word performance by the acclaimed actress in the CAC's Freeport MacMoran Theater, 900 Camp Street, Saturday evening at 8. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. The New Orleans Shakespeare Festival at Tulane opens its 22nd season with an epic romance, Cymbeline. It's a lesser-known work by the Bard that is being produced for the first time by the festival. Internationally acclaimed Shakespeare specialist Rob Clare heads the production and joins us now with actor Greg Baber. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks.
This is a first for the festival and for many in our local audience. How is it that we are not so familiar with this Shakespeare play?
It's elusive. It's difficult to categorize it. Some people think it's a comedy. Some call it a romance. You just called it an epic romance. It's certainly epic in terms of its scope. It moves between two worlds, the world of the court of Britain, King Cymbeline of Britain, and Rome, but by way of the Welsh mountains, where a couple of the key characters are secreted away to be sprung on us about a halfway through the story. So it ranges around geographically, and so it does in terms of its tone. It's at times disturbing, frightening in its intensity. It's like a psychological thriller, but also it's funny and uplifting. The characters are conflicted. The characters are pulled in different directions. Events surprise and undermine them. As soon as they think they have some kind of certainty, events pull the rug from under them again and catapult them into another place of difficulty and crisis. And so it goes on. Every character tries to shape the play to their will, and they all fail. And the result is compelling and fantastic to watch.
Where was Shakespeare in his career when he wrote this work?
Right towards the end. This is one of the last plays that he wrote. And it seemed that he'd sort of ticked all the boxes by then. He'd written lyric comedies, he'd written history plays, he'd written the great tragedies that were probably the pinnacle of his achievement. And then in his latter years, he seemed to want to go somewhere more personal, maybe somewhere more special, to write what he wanted to write. And this was one of the plays he wrote then, along with The Tempest and The Winter's Tale. Again, strange and slightly magical plays, but with a profoundly human center to them that makes them still, I say, compelling and resonant for us now, but challenging to stage. For me, that's a reason to embrace them, not to run away from them.
And we are twice lucky, first with this production and then with you, Rob, at the helm. How were you attracted to New Orleans to direct Cymbeline?
Well, I first visited New Orleans 30 years ago as a young actor, then working with the Royal Shakespeare Company. I was in a Broadway production, and at the end of the show, when everybody else went home, I decided to drive to and fro across America. So I got in a car and drove down to Key West and then drove out west to friends in first Austin and then San Diego and came by way of New Orleans, where I was fantastically lucky. Friends in Key West recommended a friend of theirs that I might call in and say hi to, a man called Mike Stark, who was one of the princes of the city, it turned out. And he opened his home to me, let me stay, and I met musicians, dancers, actors, and so on in his home. And I stayed going from east to west, and then again a month or so later going from west to east, and was captivated by the city, captivated by the energy and the huge creative vibrancy of the place. So when the festival asked me would I be interested in coming to direct a show, I leapt at the opportunity to come back here.
And the storyline of Shakespeare's Cymbeline.
It begins with the main character, Imogen, the daughter of the king. It begins with her husband being banished. She has married him in secret, and the king is in a rage. The king wanted her to marry the son of his new wife. It's the first significant wicked stepmother. That's the new queen, and she's working behind the scenes to get her son onto the throne, and more importantly, to get him married to the princess. Her husband is banished. He goes to Rome, and the story picks up from there. What happens to them all from there?
And Greg, you are one of the stellar actors in this cast. What character do you play?
I play Bellarius, a disgruntled knight. He definitely has issues with Cymbeline, and he is one of the characters that lives in a cave in Wales. This is Bellarius explaining to other characters how he came to be in exile. Oh, boys, this story the world may read in me. My body's marked with Roman swords. My report was once first with the best of notes. Cymbeline loved me, and when a soldier was a theme, my name was not far off. Then was I as a tree whose boughs did bend with fruit. But in one night, a storm or robbery, call it what you will, shook down my mellow hangings, nay, my leaves, and left me bare to weather. The character was at one time the number one knight in Britain. He was falsely accused and banished. So for 20 years, he's been off in the wilds of Wales dealing with these issues.
He's the keeper of a great secret, which is hidden away with him in his exile. There's a war brewing throughout this play between Britain and Rome. We build toward a conflict between the two powers at the same time that we're dealing with the journey of the personal characters. And this character, Bellarius, that Greg is playing, is the old soldier. It turns out to be key to both sets of events. The truth of the play is that human beings in crisis are capable of extraordinary things, sometimes for the better and sometimes for the worse. But when we're challenged, when all our resources and our defenses are stripped away and we're left only with ourselves to fall back upon, what do we draw upon? What faith sustains us? What takes us forward? Loyalty is tested. Integrity is tested. These are complex creatures who are pulled in different directions. And it's the story of their struggle that makes them, I think, profoundly resonant for us now. Although the play was written hundreds of years ago and it's set even further ago, the truths of how do we manage our lives in this strange and extraordinary world that we inhabit remain the same. And that's what keeps the play alive and kicking for us now.
Director Rob Clare and actor Greg Baber, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
The New Orleans Shakespeare Festival at Tulane presents Cymbeline, opening Saturday at Tulane's Lupin Theater, 7:30 p.m. Performances run through June 27th. More info can be found online at neworleansshakespeare.org. 2 years ago, back in 2013, WWNO producer Eve Abrams interviewed folks with a neighborhood connection to the St. Claude Avenue corridor. They shared stories about the area, changes to it post-Katrina, and how they felt about the changes. It became a 7-part radio documentary, Along St. Claude, winning a regional Edward R. Murrow Award. Now the documentary is the subject of an upcoming exhibit with New Orleans photographer Jonathan Traviesa, who captured portraits of the people whose voices carry an audio snapshot in Along St. Claude. Eve Abrams and Jonathan Traviesa are here. Welcome.
Thank you, Diane.
Thank you.
It is great to have you both in the studio, and congratulations on the Murrow Award.
Oh, thanks so much.
The St. Claude neighborhood has undergone big changes in post-Katrina New Orleans. Who are the people that we will get to know in this exhibit?
Well, I think you just took a picture of the Elmwoods, right?
Yes.
So the Elmwoods actually live down the street from Jonathan. Robert and Augusta Elmwood do, on St. Rock Avenue. Two of their children, their daughters, are in the documentary. And one of them also lives on St. Rock Avenue, and one of them lives in Holy Cross because she was priced out of buying a home in St. Rock. And actually, that's a great opportunity to say that it's not just the Ninth Ward. There are also people from the 7th and 8th Wards in the documentary, because it's all the neighborhoods on both sides of St. Claude, roughly from about St. Bernard to Poland.
And then more generally, you're going to meet folks through the portraiture and through the audio documentary who are all over the place, people and families that have been in the area for generations, all the way to new folks who have just been around for maybe a handful of months. Well, at this point, maybe, you know, a year or two.
The reason that Jonathan and I first started working together was I was enthusiastically talking about the project with a friend, and she kept wanting to know more about these people and what they looked like, and suggested that I work specifically with Jonathan. I thought, oh, that's a great idea, because Jonathan's work also deals with people and their relationship to place. You know, I think what this show does is it enables people who've heard the documentary and have formed some sort of a picture of these people and where they live to get a little bit closer. Maybe it'll challenge what people thought. Maybe it won't. And something that we're really excited about is the opening of the show, because so many of the people in the documentary will be there. And I think it'll be a great opportunity to have a real community event where we're getting to talk to our neighbors more.
Now, Jonathan, take us through your process. what makes a photograph for you a keeper?
It's really about finding the proper marriage between a subject, a person, and their environment. That's the trick for me that makes these works successful or not.
One of the images I really like is Julian Mutter. He's dressed all in white, and he has kind of shoulder-length white hair.
Yep.
And he's holding, I believe it was a glass of beer, and he's just in front of this lush field of green. He's been working in the Marigny since he was a child. He's very much at home in his space. He both embodies youth and maturity. It seems to jive really well with his personality. One of the early ones that Jonathan took of Daniel Eaglin, I really love that one too. Daniel is also an older gentleman. He's standing on the front steps of his home on Alvar Street. The exterior of his house is just perfectly manicured. And yeah. I think it has a lot to do with his wife more than him, if I remember correctly. He embodies this relaxed pride.
Yeah, those are two very special ones.
Now, Eve, you display yet another dimension of your artistic creativity in this exhibit.
I do. I quilt, I sew, I knit, and I'm also really obsessed with maps and have been for quite some time. So I've been doing a lot of embroidery work, and I thought, well, why not embroider a map of this area? So that's what I did. It has different neighborhoods of a sort, and it got into some really dicey territory, actually, because there are some neighborhoods in what I'm calling the catchment area for the documentary that are registered historic neighborhoods, and they have a clear delineation. But that comes up against how the city has defined neighborhoods for these municipal purposes, for zoning and garbage collection and such. So the map is a mixture of those two. It's interesting. You know, there's enough on it that you can find your place. But then there's, I think, plenty on it that also challenges our perceptions of this place, which is the purpose of all of this work, is to make us think differently about a geographic location.
And then also you have to mention about the dots on the map.
Right. So the map has a certain kind of knot in each place where I interviewed someone about the documentary.
It's going to be a great touch to the show.
And how big is the map?
Ooh, what would you say, Jonathan? I'm not good with space.
Oh, maybe 3 by 4 feet or 4 by 5 feet, maybe.
Yeah. We're really interested in what's going to happen with the synergy between the audio and the visual. There will be headphones there where people can don the headphones and listen to the documentary while they're looking at the images. That's going to be interesting to get feedback and also to experience it for ourselves. We haven't done that.
WWNO producer Eve Abrams and photographer Jonathan Traviesa, thanks.
Thank you, Diane. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Along St. Claude, the exhibit opens Saturday evening from 6 to 10 at the Front Gallery, 4100 St. Claude Avenue, and runs through July 5th. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at wwno.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go inside the arts. I'm Diane Mack.